It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Co-host Veronica Rickert will be back with me tomorrow. Coming up in just a few moments, a guest looks at the allure and the potential destructive power of guns and gun culture. First, Governor Scott Walker is a man who doesn't like to sit in one place for too long. He spends a lot of time on the road, whether in Wisconsin or out of state. And when it comes to his campaign, he can log hundreds of miles a day hitting vital media markets. To get an idea of what life is like on the campaign trail in one of the hottest races for governor, WPR News sent reporter Rich Kramer to tag along.
The campaign machine has started early with a morning press conference at a Milwaukee Firefighters Union and a private meeting in Wisconsin Dells. The next stop is in the far western Wisconsin city of Hudson at Viking Electronics. The event, like many Walker campaign stops, is at a manufacturing plant and is closed to the public. The governor arrives with former governor Tommy Thompson, and the men are given a tour of the facility.
So this is where you guys make that magic happen with all those new products, right?
Yeah, this is where we develop all the new products.
Away from the machines, a small group of workers have been gathered by the company. After a brief introduction by a company owner, Tommy Thompson roars into the mic.
I want to tell you that Scott Walker has made Wisconsin once again the pride of the Midwest. And I want to make sure he's able to continue doing that. That's why I'm traveling with him. And he is having a lot of success. And I'll tell you, he is going to have even more success next term.
Then it's Walker's turn to speak. He is smooth and confident, traits perfected from more than two decades in politics. He starts with a story about buying Javon Walker Packers jerseys on the cheap and links that to a recent jobs estimate.
The reason I brought number 84 out is because just last week, just a few days ago, we learned that Wisconsin last month created 8,400 new private sector jobs.
Walker attributes the growth to his economic policies and suggests the state would be closer to his goal of creating 250,000 jobs if it weren't for unions protesting his restrictions on collective bargaining.
That first year, there were protests, and then there were recalls against me. So for the first 2 years, we were kind of stuck because a lot of businesses said, what do they need most? They need certainty.
He then shifts to the future, describing his plan for the next 4 years.
It's a simple plan. It's about ensuring that everyone who wants a job can find a job.
Tax cuts, another tuition freeze, fighting Obamacare, job training, and mandatory drug testing for people on government assistance round out the rest of Walker's speech. These have been common themes on the campaign trail. When he's done, Walker greets the workers. His handlers eye their watches while security guards keep watch over the crowd.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Then, just as suddenly as they arrived, the Walker campaign leaves Hudson and drives to a St. Paul airport to catch a plane to Eau Claire. Reporters aren't allowed on his flights. In Eau Claire, he visits Johnson Lithographics, a printing company nearly 100 years old. After another obligatory tour, Walker and Thompson deliver speeches nearly identical to those given earlier in the day. Thompson's introduction, Walker's jersey story, and his plans for next term. After meeting with workers, Walker speaks with reporters from local TV stations.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
What's up? Well, great to be back in the Chippewa Valley.
He talks about his love of visiting the Chippewa Valley, which happens to be a region full of voters prone to political swings. When asked why he prefers private campaign stops at businesses, Walker says they're more effective than public gatherings.
At town hall meetings, most of the time, what you get are activists on the right and the left, and you don't really get everyday working people. When you come right to the workplace, you get just the opposite.
The final stop for the Walker campaign is a private evening fundraiser at a nearby country club. Media are not invited. It's just another day in the final push leading to what's expected to be a close election. But Walker says it's not draining. He says getting out of the Capitol to meet people is an invigorating and important part of being governor. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Central Time. Our next guest, author Craig Collins, has a relationship with guns that stretches back to his childhood when he was raised around guns and gun culture. In his family, guns were part of daily life, like they are for a lot of people in Wisconsin, much like driving a car. Collins' family history is also closely tied to the rise and spread of gun culture in 19th century America, in which he says Wisconsin played a key role. But he's also directly experienced the destructive power of guns. In a new book, he looks at firearms from the perspective of his deep history with them and the lessons he learned about them, trying to puzzle out how guns influence each of us individually and America as a whole. Craig Collins joins us now in our studio. His new book is Thunder in the Mountains, A Portrait of American Gun Culture. He's speaking, by the way, at Boswell Books in Milwaukee Wednesday night at 7. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, you, not in the book, but elsewhere, have referred to Boys in the Hood, the movie, as one of the things that inspired you to write this book, seeing how guns affected the lives of inner-city young men. And you had a realization in Winnemucca, Nevada. You were living the same story in some ways. How so?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I actually went and saw that movie. It had a profound impact on me. And, as I think we were chatting earlier, when I was 13, I went on a deer hunting trip, my first deer hunt with my dad and two older brothers, and my grandfather had given me a 30-30 Winchester, just like the one that Chuck Connors used to use in The Rifleman, the one with the lever action. And I was kind of sitting on a rock and was wondering how many shells I had in the gun, and I was cocking the gun just to check how many bullets I had in, and I snapped the lever shut, and I felt a little pinch. My finger slipped off the trigger guard. I felt a little tiny pinch on my skin, and I reflexively said, ow, and I pulled my finger back, and boom, the gun went off, and I shot myself in the foot. So that was, ever since then, anytime I see something that has gunshots in it or somebody getting shot, it has almost a visceral effect. So I was watching the Boys in the Hood, and it really had a profound impact on me, and I thought, that would be really horrible to live in a place where, the threat of gun violence hangs over you like the sword of Damocles and like in central Los Angeles, and how awful that would be. And then I thought back to myself, and when I lived in Winnemucca, Nevada, which is a small ranching and railroad and mining town in north central Nevada with a population then of about 3,000, five classmates and I were all shot, all accidentally. And three were killed, one was permanently brain damaged, one was severely wounded in the neck and torso, and then I pretty much got off easy with my foot. And essentially, I started seeing similarities between some of the places where you think of gun violence and then these small towns in the West where they occurred and I experienced it.
And we think of a contrast in a lot of ways between that urban environment and guns and where you grew up, a rural or kind of out-of-the-way place people would think of it. What was gun culture like growing up for you?
Well, everybody had a gun, and it was, when I tell people the story, they say, my God, you were 13 and you were carrying around a 30-30. Well, that was nothing unusual about that whatsoever. We'd go take guns up into the hills and, shoot rabbits, that sort of thing, all the time. So everybody had a gun, and, the issue is that the gun casualty rates in the small towns are as high or higher than they are in the places that we typically think of gun violence in places like, Los Angeles, South Chicago, Baltimore, that sort of thing. It's just that in the small towns, they tend to have accidents and suicides rather than homicides, but the gun casualties are extremely high. So people had guns, and I had friends, and they were all accidentally shot. They were playing cops and robbers and pulled the trigger and had a gun and, bullet in the chamber. They were out hunting, hit the trigger, and the gun accidentally went off, things like that. So the gun casualties were extremely high. So if you were a boy in Winnemucca, there were about 300 boys in 6th through 12th grade, you had about a 1 in 50 chance of getting shot.
So some people might say, well, no offense, but maybe you weren't trained well enough to handle that gun and be careful with it, or the other boys in these accidents didn't have the appropriate training safety precautions in place. Does that make a difference? Is that part of the problem?
Well, I actually had taken a 3-weekend-long NRA gun safety course right before I went hunting. My dad made me take it, and apparently I didn't pay attention at the right parts or something, but it was actually a very good course. But that's not quite the issue. The issue is that young boys are drawn to guns like magnets to metal. They just are. And they don't have the capabilities to really handle such a lethal weapon, in my opinion and my experience. They don't have the attention span. They don't have the kind of the cognitive awareness that this is a lethal weapon. They don't have the understanding that this could happen to me because they all think that they're invincible. And it just creates a really dangerous situation when you put boys and guns together.
We're talking about guns, gun culture, and its effect on children with Craig Collins talking about his new book, Thunder in the Mountain. You can join the conversation. What is your experience with guns? What do you think about them? Are they a common part of your life, just a natural part of the landscape, or a virtual alien artifact? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Craig Collins stays with us. He's the author of the book Thunder in the Mountains, A Portrait of American Gun Culture. We're talking about gun culture and children in particular. We'd like you to chime in with your thoughts. Do you allow your kids to shoot, to hunt? Do you think there's a link between shooting accidents involving children and how we keep our guns in the house? Would you like to see tougher laws or a change in the culture in any way? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Craig, before we go to the calls, I want to get into some of the history in your book. You trace the rise in what we think of as gun culture coming from the Midwest, in part Wisconsin, via the West, partly via your own ancestors.
Yeah, in the book, I basically looked at my own family history for a couple reasons. One, because there are some real characters there, and it makes for some good stories. But the other thing, America is unique as a country because we're the only developed country that has such an embedded gun culture. No other developed country has anything even close to what we have in America. And that didn't happen by accident. There was a confluence of two things that, in my opinion, caused the rise of the gun culture. And number one was the Civil War. And number two was geography. And after the Civil War, men and boys came home and they all had guns. And then they all went west. Tens of thousands of them, hundreds of thousands of them, and they all brought guns. The West was not a place you would ever think to go without a gun. It just wasn't a smart thing to do. And Wisconsin was one of the jumping off points to go west. And when the guns went west, they stayed. And the gun culture spread out from there. And so many of the things that you see involving the gun culture really began in the western mining towns and the small towns in the West, and they spread throughout the rest of the country. And my family actually came to Wisconsin. I'm related to Colonel James Collins, who came here to fight in the Black Hawk Wars in the 1830s. My great-grandfather, Benjamin Franklin Collins, was born on a farm near Richland Center in 1858. His father was killed in the Civil War, so he was orphaned, and he went west. And he was a rancher, and he prospected for gold, and he was funded by many of his relatives in Wisconsin. And then in 1909, he struck gold in Jarbidge Canyon, Nevada, hit a very rich vein of gold, and he triggered the last gold rush in the United States. And that was, ironically, was about 10 miles from where I shot myself in the foot. So
let's go to our callers now. We've got Marie on the line in Green Bay. Marie, hi.
Hi. I think this is a really important topic, and I have really strong feelings on it. My kids, a girl and two boys, have never been allowed to be around guns of any kind. In fact, before they were allowed to have play dates, I ask if there are guns in the house and don't let them go if there is. And I feel like we really do need to change our culture. I think we can. We changed our culture on cigarettes in a generation, so we can change our culture dramatically if we want to. But I wanted to kind of disagree with the guest on the point that he made that boys are drawn to guns naturally. They're taught to like guns, and I taught my boys from the time they were little that guns are not funny or fun or cool, and they weren't drawn to them, and they didn't make their Legos into guns or anything of the kind. So I don't think it's a natural thing.
All right. Marie, thanks for the call. You said boys are drawn to guns. I don't know that you used the word naturally, Craig.
Yeah, I would disagree. The caller makes an excellent point, but I would like to clarify that I never said that boys are naturally drawn to guns. Whatever the reason, it could be cultural, it could be whatever. Gunshots are the second leading cause of death among boys. They outnumber the next nine leading causes of death combined. So it's a huge problem, and gun casualties in the United States are a uniquely male problem. 97% of all gun casualties in the United States involve a man or a boy. So it's a remarkable thing. one of the things that I would say that one of the boys in my book that I write about, his mother was much like the caller who just called in. She didn't want anything to do with guns. She didn't want her son to have guns. He was best friends with my son, and whenever we would go to a movie, she wouldn't even let me take him to a movie that had any guns in it. That's how adamant she was. And when the boy was 15, he climbed up into the family attic where the father had hidden a rifle, and he found it, and he shot and killed himself, and it was quite tragic. So, you know, you can take all those precautions and you can take all those measures, but the bottom line is that if you have a boy in the house, if you're a parent, in my opinion, you should either not have a gun in the house, or it should have a trigger lock, or be kept in a safe, or better yet, be kept in a locker at a gun range off premises.
Thanks for the call, Marie. We've got Adam with us now in Horicon. Adam, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'd just like to say I'm a gunsmith, and I'm part of the Wisconsin Army National Guard, and I've been around guns since I was about 3 years old when I got my first BB gun, pellet gun, from my grandpa. I've shot everything from small arms to anti-tank. It's not the training. It's not that we need stiffer laws. It's the fact that media and social media, we immortalize these people like gangsters and rappers that say, well, I'm pissed off, I'm gonna go shoot somebody. And that's where, like, all of our heroes, like, I grew up with John Wayne and stuff like that. Other people are growing up with Tupac, Notorious B.I.G., and that's what's popular now. And when people want to solve their problems, they turn to, well, how do people do it on TV? How do people do it in songs and stuff like that, what you hear and what you see every single day? And that's what...
Gotcha, Adam. I want to get our guest in. Craig, first of all, media causing unhealthy attitudes toward firearms, he says, and he's obviously comfortable with firearms in his life.
Well, he sounds a lot like me, except I've never fired an anti-tank gun. It sounds like kind of like fun, but I've never done it. Anyway, you know, I would have to say that when I was growing up, you know, we didn't have rap music, and still the gun casualties for young boys in the Mountain West was extraordinarily high, and many of my friends were shot. So I don't think that that had a great deal to do with it. I do think that the media may play a role. But I'm not 100% certain on that. And I would say that in the inner city, boys and people in general, they get shot due to homicide. In the Mountain West, which is 8 states, which is 1/3 of the entire country, and the gun rates are 3 to 20 times higher than they are anywhere else. These are boys who die in accidents and in, you know, self-inflicted gunshots. So they're not, it has nothing to do really with the rap culture.
Adam, thanks a lot for the call. I mean, I'm guessing you hear from a lot of people who are, you know, gun owners, handle their weapons safely, raise their kids responsibly, saying your message is going too far. Guns aren't that bad. How do you respond?
Well, I would say to that, there's a couple things. Well, first of all, in my book, I don't really take a stance. There's no editorializing. I tell stories that have to do with guns and are set in the gun country. And I leave the heavy lifting to the reader and let them decide. And I purposely don't editorialize or stand on a soapbox and deliver a political screed, because that, frankly, would be boring. But in my personal opinions, what I would say is that one of the things we need to do in this country is develop a national gun database. We really have none. The Center for Disease Control collects about 7 pieces of data whenever somebody gets shot. When a jetliner crashes, we collect millions of pieces of data, and we need to develop a robust database and really look at the data and have that lead us to some answers and some solutions to the problems.
Since you shot yourself in the foot while hunting, have you fired guns? Have you gone hunting again?
Well, about 6 months later, I went hunting. You know, as they say in Nevada, get back on the horse that threw you. So I was back hunting again. I'm not anti gun per se. I'm not anti-hunting, and I've hunted. I visit relatives in Idaho, and I enjoy hunting. But I do have a big issue with guns and the proliferation of guns, and especially as how they relate to children.
Briefly, a message for parents out there.
My simple message would be that if you have children in the house, and if you have specifically boys in the house, it's the statistics say it is extremely unwise and unsafe to have a gun in the house. And if you do have a gun in the house, it absolutely needs to be locked at all times, or better yet, be kept off premises.
All right, Craig, thanks so much for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you.
That's Craig Collins. His book is Thunder in the Mountains, A Portrait of American Gun Culture. You can catch him at Boswell Books in Milwaukee. That's Wednesday night at 7, and there's more info on the Boswell Books website.